This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 409, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes.
Giddy up, 409.
Before I knew there would be a time.
Giddy up.
iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 409. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And the internet's Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
Wow, something happened well, I'm not aware of.
He's so impressive.
We are iFanboy.
I admire you, Paul.
We like
comics. I admire you too, Josh.
Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book we read. Call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about it in this show, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, and other goofy nonsense. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning, this is a review show, so there'll be spoilers, and we'll talk about things that happened in the book, so if you haven't read them yet, and you're fearful of spoilers, pause the show and come back. Is there a phobia, official phobia for spoilers? I feel like there should be for some people on the internet. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
We'll get the doctor hopped on that. Paul! Listen, I got the text messages also. Paul!
Connor.
You had to pick.
I did have the pick.
A lot of interesting stuff. A lot of new things came out this week. For me, we all love a Western, right?
Yeah, we love
Western. We love a Western. Pretty Deadly Number One by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Emma Rios, and little-known colorist Jordi Belair. She's doing her victory lap.
Welcome to the Jordi Belair podcast.
Welcome to the Jordi Belair cast.
Well, you know, the thing is, you people don't understand, it is difficult to transfer money from Ireland. And she is doing a fine job of it.
And their economy is not in great shape, so.
No.
It's tough.
No, but she's working. She's just slumming over there, so.
Yeah.
It's fine.
She has one more week to get a full month. It is a 5-Wednesday month of iFanboy Picks of the Week. Anyways, I thought Pretty Deadly was a rip-roaring good time, and apparently some people are taking that a little too literally.
You wrote that down.
Yes, I did.
did you pull your collar out while you said it?
This is a Western. It's a fairy tale. It's a sort of a Pale Rider kind of Western. It's a very dark kind of a Johnny Cash kind of Western. And there's a bit of poetry to it, which I like. And there's even a little bit of samurai kind of action. There's like a blind swordsman in here. And so this sort of ticked off all my boxes. This is like all the things that I love. And it also looked really gorgeous. And looking through this book, if you're not familiar with Emma Rios, like I kind of see sort of a Raphael Grandpa, Yuko Shimizu kind of thing. Yuko Shimizu, the cover artist for The Unwritten. I see a little bit of that in there, in the just the great inking and a lot of great texture there, with just like these, like this, just the tufts of hair and grass and just all the different textural stuff. And I love that it starts with the cover, with that great sort of like pink sundown reflected in the water. And as we know from the Lord of the Rings, that means that orcs are going to die the next day.
Right.
And that sort of sets it up. And there's this sort of like pastel color palette throughout that reminds me of just those beautiful sort of stop and stare kind of sundowns. And there's going to be some killing tomorrow. So this is a book that it definitely has a rhythm to it, and you sort of have to latch on to that sort of fairy tale ballad kind of rhythm, because it is kind of, if you don't latch on to that, I can see how it would be kind of confusing. And with this first issue, still getting to know this cast of characters and what they're up to. There's a girl with like a vulture cloak, and she's hanging out with a guy who may or may not be blind with a blindfold on. And he's a very kind of a blind swordsman, kind of samurai character, and Death's daughter, basically, in this fairy tale that they tell. We have this character that looks kind of like Vampire Hunter D, with the big furs and stuff on her shoulder and the big brimmed hat. And she reminds me, she's a Clint Eastwood kind of character. Like I said, Pale Rider earlier. She's a very, very dark force of nature kind of character coming in, and probably going to be dealing in a lot of death. Shoots a guy in the leg and leaves him to be infected in a bordello. And so there is a bit of fun to be had in this issue too. But what did you guys think about this?
It looked good.
Okay.
I'm afraid of saying anything. First, my copy is pristine. I haven't ripped it. I haven't done anything. I didn't get it. I didn't really like it.
Okay. I figured that would be the case.
Did you? Do you assume that much? I mean, it's I don't know.
Well, I talk to you guys on a weekly basis, and I kind of have a feeling of what you guys are getting.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Why? I don't know. It just didn't speak to me at all in any way. And it looked really good, like Connor said, but I don't know. It just felt like it was hinting at things instead of telling me things, and I don't quite understand what the point was. And there was all the fancy bits at the beginning, where it was. I don't know. I just didn't get it. It didn't
excite. Felt very disjointed. I just didn't follow along very, very well.
It didn't feel grounded.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what the story is or who I'm supposed to care about.
Okay. I've heard stream of consciousness applied to the structure of the story. And I mean, a lot of times I can totally turn me off to something. Like I'm not a big fan of dream sequences. So when you get a little too transcendental, I'm not into it. But I really think it's one of those books where, like Satellite Sam or something like that, you kind of have to be on the right wavelength for it. And if you're not, there's a lot of really subjective things about this book that could either really entrance you or could really turn you off and make you more dismissive of the book. And I completely understand that. For me, this really worked, and I love that opening where the girl in the vulture cloak is describing this fairy tale almost in this like Sweeney Todd kind of way of this tragic romance that culminated in this guy locking up this girl in a tower. So like Rapunzel, and then death comes to take her, and they ultimately conceive a child, and that child is basically this sort of Clint Eastwood like man with no name, but it's a woman with no name kind of character who death rides on the wind. And I don't know. I looked at it as sort of a ballad, and it is very abstract. But I don't know. I guess just tonally and just a lot of the elements here are all things that I dig: samurai movies and really dark, like black-hearted kind of westerns, and so that really turned me on with this.
I think that one of the things that I'm noticing, we've been I think very positive on Image Comics lately, but one of the things that I'm starting to see is there's like a few strains of patterns that are developing.
Okay.
There's a pattern of sort of not quite apocalyptic, but like secret agency behind everything in the world is actually shit stories, a few of those.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like it's somehow related to sort of an ethereal strange western story.
East of West.
As of East of West.
Sure.
And there's a couple other things like in that sci-fi vein.
Porn.
And sex, that was the other thing. just vaginas just everywhere and butts. No, but it's true. Like, I'm starting to see these themes. They're going to have like the sex wing of Image. But in that way, like, if I was to compare it to East of West, which I'm having a hard time grasping onto now at this point, also, like, it's missing for me.
You need a central character.
At the very least, East of West seems to have an edge attitude, almost a sense of humor to it, in a sense. It has a couple of things that there was just nothing here for me that grabbed me like that, I guess. And I'm not sitting here saying this is terrible. It's just not my thing. It's not like I read it and was like, oh, this is bad. I just was like, I don't know.
I think between this and East of West, the most exciting thing and the thing that I latch onto is like death is coming. It's this. Encroaching force, and it's like the Punisher. Like there's this force of nature that is coming to get you, and what's going to happen when they get here? Now it could totally drop the ball when death does get here, and we see just what it amounts to. But maybe it amounts to something amazing. And for me, it's just that feeling of like, you know, the hair on your neck standing up, that this. You know, ferocious like gunslinger is coming, and what's going to happen when she does. So, I hope people check it out. I hope people stick around for a few issues and just see what's happening here, because I think it could be cool.
Now, much like George Costanza, I want to wrap myself in velvet. Velvet number one.
You want to ensconce yourself?
Ensconce myself in velvet. Brubaker and Epting, and this is my pick of the week. Had I had the pick of the week, which I didn't. I loved everything about this.
I figured this would be the pick of the week if it was you guys.
This is Image Comics, new number one, Brubaker and Epting doing a straight-up spy story set in the 70s, or at least partially in the 70s.
Partially, yeah.
And, you know, they were basically doing a 70s spy story or attempting to do one with Captain America when they worked together before. And this is them getting to do a straight up, you know, no superhero business spy story. And I loved everything about it.
It's basically Stacey London from TLC's What Not to Wear as sort of a fusion of Miss Moneypenny and James Bond.
That's funny. Josh.
Like, because she's the, like, supposedly the receptionist or the secretary and...
Right, it's basically what if Miss Moneypenny was the baddest ass in the office, but she's just sort of retired. Because this is what I really liked about this was the protagonist isn't like some slinky 25-year-old. You know, she's a little older. She's got some gray hair.
That silver streak.
They had to put that gray streak in there. It's just a visual representation right, that she's like, not 22.
And well, there's a bit. She's got a bit more lines in her face than normal.
I know. Scenes.
But like, you know, she's sort of an expert and she's a veteran, and so she's probably in her 40s, and which is not usually a female heroine you get in comics very much. And I like that she sort of had retired. It's a nice twist on things.
There's an older female heroine. It's being written by Ed Brubaker or Greg Rucka. Like that's it. That's the only way that gets sold.
And I should say this is my runner up, and I love all the car scenes because it feels like a crime movie. Yeah.
This is one of those things where we're always amazed when we would compare Steve Epting to old Steve Epting.
Yes.
But like I feel like he's even leveled up here. This book like the books that he did with Captain America had a boy, was he wrong for the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
But, the books that he did in Captain America had a feel of this era, but in this book, like they are this era, so he can just go nuts in it. And what an amazing fit. What a perfect sort of tone visually, I think. And also, I think it was nice to see Ed Brubaker do something. I mean, obviously, there's like a really familiar feeling with him and Epting, but it was nice to see him do something that was creator-owned that wasn't Sean Phillips. And I like Sean Phillips a lot, but I never got into the whatever the Cthulhu Fatale. Book is he has now. Yeah, I was probably just very dismissive right there.
Cthulhu.
But I don't know. Just it had all the look and feel of the parts of Captain America that I really liked, but without any of the shackles, you know, with
so
Elizabeth
Breitwiser
and colors. I liked it a lot. I don't think I was effusive as you.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got a little confused about which handsome brown-haired man I was looking at any given time.
Well.
And I had to go back a couple of times and compare, his bangs are down, his bangs are up. Which
it's the
you know,
Queen of Country problem.
There is some great hair
yes.
in here, though.
But they had color to lean on that they didn't have in the other one. They were all in the same suit, which, again, they would have been. But I liked it.
Look at that Mustang.
I want to know what's gonna. No, and the car was just perfect.
1968 New York, Cherry Baby in the background.
Honestly,
Shaolin versus Ninja.
Yeah, that sort of driving along on what I imagine is 8th Avenue, somewhere in the 40s. That sold it for me entirely.
It just has that period piece kind of lighting, yeah. The kind of 60s, 70s.
I think
lighting.
There was something in the air. We're talking about Captain America: Winter Soldier later, but that also has a very 70s spy movie feeling and. I read this after having seen the trailer, and it's just sort of I was in that mood of this is awesome. This is just a 70s spy story with the cars and the lingo and the technology, and I thought it was great. I really liked
it.
I like this a lot. I mean, my preference for Brubaker is more the lowdown kind of crime stuff, like the first arc of Criminal, like that kind of stuff, over the spy kind of thing. But I thought this was pretty cool.
It's great, and it's an oversized issue, so you get a whole hell of a lot of story in it.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Am I the only one reading Tom Strong and the Planet of Peril?
We are both reading Tom Strong and the Planet of Peril because it's called that.
I really love it. I mean, I don't think we talk about it that much, but I really do.
Talk about the first one.
It's kind of a strange but fun trip through this unknown world full of familiar tropes, which is not a groundbreaking kind of story, but I like the characters that we're meeting.
Yeah.
And I like this world ravaged by plague. And all of the things that come with it.
What's interesting about it is that, so, you know, Tom Strong, very like, just like a golden age kind of idea, like an Edgar Rice Burroughs kind of Tarzan-y kind of character. That's his origin.
Yeah.
Doc Savage, yeah. And you know, the talking monkeys and robots and things. And but then you put that into, like, this issue. Each issue has been a little bit different in setting. They're on Terra Obscura, excuse me. Getting choked up. And
I love this book.
It's just so good. And it's, you know, terrible things have gone wrong on this planet, which is basically like a mirror world. And they're looking for that world's Tom Strong. And this one's kind of like a Mad Max kind of thing, like like convoys and
supply convoy gets attacked by a biker gang and they have to circle
biker
the wagons
gangs and stuff.
And,
Who's writing this?
Peter Hogan? Paul Hogan? Hogan.
I mean, I know who's writing it. Not Alan Moore.
Right.
And that's not – I'm not coming down on it for that because out of all of the things that he quote-unquote created – and yes, I've said that. I'm grown up enough to say that. This is one of those ones that's very – it's like anybody could have done that. If he – you know, like they could have just done another character like this. He was just playing on a theme really. So as long as somebody else can do that effectively, which it sounds like they are, that's cool. It's browsers.
Paul Hogan is Crocodile Dundee. Peter Hogan is the British comic writer that I'm thinking
of. I like the character we met in this, the Cavalier.
Yes.
Who is basically kind of a Green Arrow-esque character in the world simply because of the mask or the face, I guess. But you know, he's talking about how he's in a superhero team, but all he can do is swing a little sword. Well, they fought aliens and things like that. I thought the character was
and
really
he's sort
great.
Of like he's like Errol Flynn, like he's this real ladies man, but everyone but he puts on these airs that he's a fop, in his words, that everyone thinks he's gay, and that's his thing. That's his shtick. He has that sword, and it's interesting to see there's a lot of times where they bring the gold. There's, you know, a lot of hay to be made from bringing a Golden Age property into a dark, gritty, like Dark Knight Returns kind of world. And it's like, do they change or do they stay the same? And I like that, like, Tom Strong is resilient and he's always that character. And just because the surroundings are darker and, you know, Thunderdome-y, you know, it's he doesn't go there.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It's not a book I would rave about, but every time a new one comes out, I go, ooh, and I'm happy to read it.
Oh, yeah, it's just really entertaining.
And it's a mini. I think it's a five or six.
He makes that same noise when the mail comes, so
yeah,
don't.
Well, that's true. Now, what's really funny about Daredevil 32 is that I had completely forgotten about what was on the cover. So I'm reading it.
Me too.
So when the big reveal happened with the monsters, I was completely caught unawares because I literally had forgot. I just dived right into the issue.
And what's funny is that I had definitely noticed that cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd seen it around and I'd been like, oh, that's weird. And again, like as soon as I flipped it open, like it was gone, which is, I guess, the best case scenario for this.
I knew Mark Waid was up to something, though, because they had the great transition where Daredevil is going up to – because there's something – there's some ties that Foggy has found between the Sons of the Serpent and the occult. So he goes to talk to Doctor Strange, and Doctor Strange sends him to, and Chris Samnee does a great Doctor Strange, sends him to.
Chris Samnee does a great
everything, yeah. to see Jack Russell,
right?
And so that should have clued you to maybe some monsters, but
that's the name of Werewolf by Night. That just occurred to me now.
Exactly. That's
by the way,
going
that's
after.
They tried to do a gritty version of Werewolf by Night, but he was still named Jack Russell. I don't know how those two things square each other.
But they have that great transition where Doctor Strange is setting up, you're going to go to this place that's very strange and is unlike anywhere you've ever been. And like you see this establishing shot and it's in silhouette and it's like an old creepy house and a tower. And you think like, what, Transylvania or something. And then the next panel, you see the light coming through and it's a sign, you're welcome to like it's a town in Tennessee.
Kentucky,
excuse me.
They're
not all this. God damn it.
This East Coast liberal bullshit is going to be the death of us all.
Damn it.
But so I was like, oh, monsters. Right. Cover. Duh. Like, it just was. It was nice. It was nice to be completely caught off guard.
And then Matt Murdock is in the taxi and he's talking to the guys and he's saying, all those race riots you got up there in New York City and all those wild animals running around. And he's like, when you talk about wild animals, and he's like, well, we don't let those people around here. And then they're going after the darks. They're going to have their own like pitchfork thing. And you're like, what's coming here? But I knew like he's like subverting expectations. And they're not going to lynch somebody.
The sad thing is I have had the first half of that conversation with someone in the South. Again, not the whole South is like that, but I've had it.
You could have that conversation
anywhere. But so anywhere. The point is,
I mean, you went to school in upstate New York.
The point is, I was not thinking monsters. So I was thinking that he was gonna go with it, go here and get some angry letters.
It's not as
and
if.
So then, when the monsters came, I was like, "All right."
It's not as if Wade hasn't let his feelings be known politically.
No, but I was like, "Oh no!" But I was like, "Wade wouldn't." It's not that simple. There's something else going on here. And okay, maybe I remembered the cover too, so I knew where it was going.
I think that the thing that was really that made this issue stand out for me, and the reason that I wanted to talk is that it felt really loose, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just feel like at this point they are able, like Wade is just having fun with it. Like he's having a lot of fun with it,
well, and the conventions and of
yeah, oh bullshit. the conventions of what Daredevil is and what a hero is supposed to be, and there's a very sort of old school Marvel thing going on here where Matt is making bad choices a lot. He's rushing in head first, and it feels like sort of, you know, early Spider-Man, the kind of thing where like he's blundering in ahead of himself, and he's too confident. And I really like that's a subversion of sort of our expectations of superheroes. It doesn't actually happen all that much, especially with a character like Daredevil, who for such a long time was, I got this, you know, basically.
Right.
And he's really stuck with, without turning into a comedy, but he's stuck with continually exploring the limitations of the guy's limitations. Like he's blind, and he makes mistakes based on it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember that being a thing that happened all that often. And then at the same time, like at the very end, screw it. Have Satana and Werewolf by Night and a mummy. Like, yeah. That's, like, go with it.
So much happens in this issue, too. I mean, you got the stuff with the Jester in the beginning.
I forgot the whole first half.
The Jester stuff, and like that, and when you're talking about being conscious of Matt's blindness and then how other people perceive that, or they think that it's an act, and him, you know, coming upon with the cliffhanger from the last issue was a dummy of Foggy. We didn't know that, or we probably could have suspected that. But
I hadn't forgotten.
It's a dummy of Foggy, yeah. You know, bound up. And then a suicide note that was doused in cyanide. And, the Jester watching his reactions.
Why won't he grab the note?
Why won't he grab the note? Why isn't he reacting? He's his best friend. This is the perfect plan.
The Jester was a little close to that. That bad Astro City narrator. So I had a little like, all right, let's get this out of the way now.
Well, I mean, before in the past with Daredevil, the idea was, yeah, he's blind, but he's got his heightened senses, so he's not any different than you or me. So they never really played with the idea of what would be different
about him. He can't read a T-shirt.
Right, so they just kind of treated him like everybody else. And here Mark Waid says, well, he can still do most stuff, but he can't read the screen on a computer, you know, so like there's still going to be problems, or he can't read the name on the outside of a suicide note. So I do like that, you know, it's a bit more delving into what makes him unique and different as a character.
Also, before we move on, really great colors in this issue. It's Javier Rodriguez.
Jordi Belair. Oh, sorry.
It's Javier Rodriguez.
I figured it was Jordi Belair.
Is that Spanish for Jordi Belair?
is that her Spanish nom de plume?
She's everywhere, but just agents everywhere, but no, really great colors. Like, I mean, it's like Universal Monsters and a Jester character, so the colors have to be like just really pop like that, and perfect for this issue, I think.
Well, speaking of loose storytelling, I think that's the perfect way to describe All-Star Western right now, and I've come to terms with the fact that it's not Jonah Hex, and I sort of put that behind me, and I don't worry about that with every issue. And
just, I know you're talking to me, asshole.
Enjoy the what they're doing. So what,
you mean it's not Jonah Hex the previous run?
Right, it's not Jonah Hex the previous run. It's loosey goosey Jonah Hex. And what this arc has been Jonah Hex. And I realize loosey goosey Jonah Hex is probably some sort of strange dichotomy. But so in this arc, he's in the future. He's been Booster Gold had gone in the past, and they brought him back into the future. And so they sort of wrap up what they've been doing, which was he's on trial because he saw some dude holding hostages and he just walked up and shot him in the head. So he's been on trial, and you know, Bruce Wayne helps him get off with his high-priced lawyers. And there's a great sequence where they're talking about Jonah Hex and saying, you know, he's never going to make it in the modern world, because they figure out through some carbon dating and things, and they think that he actually is time traveling. And Bruce, you know, he's never going to make it in the modern world. A man like that will be, you know, overwhelmed and lost. And smash cut to him on a giant Harley with a leather jacket and a bandana, and he's like Peter Fonda in
Motorcycle Movie.
Yes.
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider. He's basically Peter Fonda, Easy Rider.
Read a book.
He's got a gun in his hip, and he's got a girl and a small short skirt on behind him, and he's taken to modern life pretty well. He's adapted, and they go in search for some gold that he had buried a long time ago. And they're having fun with it. He goes to the gun store, so he goes to the shooting range and starts shooting modern weapons. He's pretty thrilled about that. So,
Go ahead. Do you think he's like, I can't believe they're still having us do this? I mean,
I think they're just gonna have as much fun with it as they can.
Except that's not the case, because if you read Jimmy online, he's sort of like, I don't know why people aren't reading this.
Yeah.
Like if it was me, I would be like, I don't know. Let's see what we can do to make them cancel us, because nothing seems to work, which is a fine thing.
So I don't know how long they're gonna keep him here in the future, but. Right now, you got Jonah Hex in the Southwest with an American flag, leather jacket, and going to a Burning Man-esque sex party in the desert.
I think that's interesting because, yeah, it's probably, you know, it's not going to be permanent that Jonah Hex be in the future, but like to push him back in time. Like Jonah Hex is the one character that you don't have to worry about like bringing back like modern conveniences and like trying to profit on it. Like he's not Marty McFly. Like, it's not.
How does he not shoot all those yuppie hippies?
Well, you know, he does like sex. We do know that.
But he also, you know, he's got a hair trigger, that guy.
True. Then I forgot the cherry on top is that at the end Constantine shows up.
Oh.
So it's like everything. Well, it's like everything Josh would hate about this comic in one comic.
A Constantine.
A Constantine. Well, I didn't call him Constantine. That was what I was
You call him Constantine. Yeah, that's
Constantine
true.
Shows up because he's also at the sex party because there's demons at the sex party. So,
well, that makes sense.
So it's I'm enjoying. I gotta say, they're just gonna go going for it.
If you had put a Constantine Hex crossover 2 years ago, I'd have been like, hey, ooh, let's see what you can do with this. Let him run.
Right. So that's All-Star Western 24. It's still going. I'm still reading it. And there you go. So in the meantime, you can help our show out by going to fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find our link to Amazon. And if you make your purchases through that link, we get a little piece of the action, a little piece of the pie. Helps us out. Keeps the lights on. Keep everything going. And you can also help us out by becoming an iFanboy member. Check it out by going to iFanboy.com. Click it on the support iFanboy link at the top of the page. And you can become a member for $3 a month, $30 a year. And that's probably the most direct way to help us, but either way it helps, and we appreciate everyone who does either one of those. And so now what, guys?
Okay, I'm going to need a little bit of help from Darth Vader to read the title of the next book, Marvel Now.
What?
Number one. with short stories from Scotty Young.
That was not pre-prepared, by the way. We just know each other that well.
We just did Scott Adsit, Jerry Duggan, Brian Posehn, Elliot Callan, Sarah Schaefer, Steve Lieber, a whole bunch of people. And it's basically Marvel poking fun at itself. And I was kind of impressed by how far they went with it.
I liked the one part.
The one part?
What?
Which part?
See, I want this to be funny, but it wasn't mostly.
Humor is so specific and subjective, though.
It's very specific, and I thought the best part, the part that I initially, when I first went to read it, I stopped because I was like, that looks really dense and I don't think it's going to pay off, which was the High Evolutionary part, which is the second story.
Okay.
And I didn't recognize any of the names and I was just like, I got stuff to do. But when I saw you put it on the list, I went back and I read it, and that bit where they just went down every Marvel trope for a while, I thought was really good. I thought it was very funny and I thought it was super spot on. With the bit where they were talking about, the punchline was, hey, but there were three Wolverine books. I'm trying to remember what the thing was. They were talking about something in that, like basically you're like, that's never going to succeed. I should have had this open.
Well, they're talking about some of the other books that are out there and like, such popular characters as blank and blank and like, and then they get to like Valkyrie and they're like, and who are you again? And she's like, I'm Valkyrie. I'm in a, you know, very you know, critically acclaimed book called, you know, Fearless Defenders, and you open with Scotty Young making fun of the fact that he does, you know, all those baby variant covers, and people complain and troll about it online, and, you know, why don't you do, you know, cats and stuff, and that's kind of the bookend for it. And I kind of like I do like
that Marvel has, you know, always shown a openness to make fun of themselves.
It was a very classic move on their part, and I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, that's,
I think.
I mean, it's very inside baseball, but I, you know, what is an inside baseball in comics? But, you know, they've always done that. They've always had enough.
But I think they hit so many of the different things that they get criticized for that any reader who has read a Marvel book will find something in there like that they'll, you know, nod at, you know, like they do that all the time. And I just think that that's kind of refreshing that a publisher would do that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Archie's that way too. And you guys were talking about the, you know, Afterlife with Archie book.
Oh, so mad you were not on the show for that episode.
I know. I was mad, too, when I realized it was my, you know, my
stupid
week
Josh.
Off. And it's just like, yeah. And
yeah, you know, after that, though, you know, it wasn't funny again. Like, the Thor thing was kind of funny. They were poking up, you know, like, that was all right. None of the Wyatt Cenac, and I think Wyatt Cenac is great. None of those were very funny, you know.
I liked the Captain America being...
Captain America was the closest.
Catfished.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Red Skull lured him to this, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't think, you know, they were, you know, laugh out loud funny or anything, but it's not that I thought that they were hilarious. It's that I thought I was kind of surprised in a pleasant way that they were willing to poke fun at themselves like that.
I think, though, again, that's a really tough... That's a hard task in front of them. So, you know, you give them some leeway. I don't know. I think it could have been funnier. But then again, it would have just been funny to me. So, who knows?
Aquaman 24 featured the return of Aquaman's beard.
That's damn right.
So what happened was Aquaman got knocked unconscious, slept through all those Villains Forever crossovers, and woke up on this side. And... what I found funny to myself,
so did I.
To me, and only me, was that he wakes up from his, I think it was like 6 months, 6 month coma. Yeah, he's been asleep for 6 months. Very neatly trimmed beard, and
well, maybe that's a story. Is someone
well,
was
that's
taking
what I
care
think.
Of his beard.
I feel like Volko was standing over him, going, you know, he does look handsome with the beard, but it's a little scraggly. So I'm gonna make sure it's all nice for him. Also, apparently, gave him a little haircut during the 6 months because his hair is pretty much still the same length, but he has the stylish beard now.
He wasn't Spider Jerusalem at the beginning of...
Right, it wasn't like wild, it was scraggly, it was like...
I have that page.
Very neatly trimmed. I thought you sold that one.
No, I kept that one. Oh. I had page one, page five from issue one.
It's a good page, but very neatly... I mean, my beard is scragglier than is not as neatly groomed as this guy's beard is. It's just, I always find that funny is that they make the effort saying, well, he was asleep, so he has a beard now. It's not like...
You used the beard oil?
Steven Seagal when he woke up from...
It's just all seawater. It's just because it was like just...
I think there's sandalwood, probably.
Yeah. So. You know, Charlie Hunnam could play Aquaman visually.
He
can't act, so that would be hard, but... That's right. I said it.
Yeah, this was fine. I think this is Jeff Johns'...
If Aquaman were to yell and or whisper a lot...
If I want an Aquaman in the movie, I want like the Grant Morrison JLA Aquaman.
Then they'd be fine.
And, actually, whispering
or like the
fits.
Justice Perfect. League Unlimited, wasn't he like that? He was beardy in that.
He was only
and,
briefly in Justice League Unlimited.
Like and you do, but like you just have to glower. Like you don't have to talk a lot
Perfect.
To be Aquaman.
You know what? Perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect.
That's
the best casting I've ever. But again, visual. I can't.
There's your
every
show.
Every time he yells, I laugh. that's all he does.
So,
what are you doing?
This is Jeff Johns.
Why do I still watch that
issue?
Show? It's the worst show I watch, and I won't stop.
Well, then maybe you should.
I'm off topic.
What's
anyway,
happening
that was
with
the second last issue?
Uncanny Avengers number
right.
three.
Everything that I complained about now, what not being that funny, Uncanny Avengers and Hard of Hearing Cap made me laugh out loud every single time. I was eating I was reading this out while I was eating, and I was like giggling loudly. Because, what's that, soldier?
Did you snarf?
I found it hilarious. And I don't remember anything else about the issue, but that made me happy alone. And I could, he could literally drag that up for another two issues, and I think it would keep getting funnier.
I think we go this way.
Like, oddly enough, like the guy who played Opie in Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
Who was that? Happens in Black Hawk Down, too. The guy loses his hearing and...
I thought it's not connected
to Sons of Anarchy. See what I was doing there?
I thought that the claws aren't Wolverine's mutation. Oh, no, the claws are. I'm sorry. I'm backwards.
Yeah,
the claws
that's why they were bone
metal
claws.
Isn't. Never mind. I'm stupid.
Listen,
originally it was just the healing factor, but
right. Anyway,
since Origin, it's the bone claws and the healing factor.
Sam, number four.
Satellite Sam.
I hate to be the guy, but like this was the one that I was like, this issue, it's not my kind of issue.
This was not my favorite issue.
No. It wasn't just me. It
was confusing, but I did really enjoy the TV stuff. We got back to the making of TV, which I like. Which obviously no one wants to watch read a comic about the making television, literally. But, you know, having worked in live TV, I did.
That's the most interesting part for me, too. But
I did enjoy those scenes,
But they also sort of let go of the plot on, like, the mystery of, like, who killed his dad.
I feel like I missed something.
They have like three plot lines going.
Issue three was they really built some momentum because like he was talking to one of the women and like now we're going to find out what happened or like we're getting closer to finding out what happened to my dad. And I just feel like it kind of got a real backseat in this issue.
I don't think the time jumps were handled very well.
I think the problem we mentioned this before is that. And this is sort of what Josh talked about, the velvet, but worse, is that all the guys are middle-aged, doughy, with mustaches.
Yeah.
And part of that is a commentary. Like,
sure, but it's
just all look like that. And since it's in black and white,
yeah,
it's even, like, you can't even have, like, them in different suit colors or different ties or something to help, so it's...
On the other hand, and I feel the need to point this out, is that every time I look at this, I think... This might be one of the best looking comic books I've ever seen.
I say color would help, but like I love
I don't want that.
Black and white. Yeah.
Look at the patterns. Look at what Chaykin is doing. This is like, I feel like we've discovered some amazing European comic that we never saw. And we're looking at it. And we're going, this is so beautiful. Why have I never seen this before?
The suit texture's great.
Just all of the textures. The whole thing is so... visceral, and it's just so good looking, and the acting is really good. It's just that this one just needs a little more to hang on, and then to be a little more clear.
Then you learn the phrase cookie pusher.
I did like moments. I like the guy who.
Yeah, I learned it now.
The guy who's the new star of Satellite Sam is just not an actor. And right. The other actors hate him because he's not an actor. And
now, see, that's where I got confused. Now, is that the guy?
That's
the
son. Yeah.
That's Mikey.
Right.
Yeah.
He took over
for
his dad.
So the last time we saw him, he went to the bar with the lady. Then we cut, and we're on the show set. And then later we cut back to the bar, and I just was like, "What's happening?"
It's a little tricky. But I look forward to reading this all in a chunk.
Yeah, but there needs to be now because it's not clear.
You're right.
Or some visual indicator. Because that isn't happening.
They should have characters constantly refer to the time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it is 4:11
on June 3rd.
And it's unfortunate because it's totally up our alley and it's really interesting and it's well-written stuff.
I wouldn't call it a bad issue at all. I would say it was just a bit...
No, but of the
confusing.
Four,
yeah.
Not my favorite.
Yeah. I'm not dropping the book.
No.
Look at it. So you may remember that when the Unwritten announced their crossover with the Fables, I was like, ugh.
Yep,
and then in the middle of it, I was like, eh. And now at the end of it, I'm like, ugh.
I don't remember the middle part, so this is...
maybe I didn't mention it. It was fine. I don't think I realized... This is one of those things where I wasn't sure if I had to buy Fables or read Fables to get with this.
Did you?
So I decided not to, which is what I do during crossovers. I just don't get the other book. I just read the one that I'm reading and hope I can make sense of it, which has been going pretty well with X-Men until this week. But I can fill in the blanks just fine. This needs to be over. The story was progressing so well towards the culmination of the whole thing. And now we're just farting around in Fable Town for some reason. I don't want to anymore. Sorry. I'm cranky man this week.
More like Foibles crossover.
Yeah.
I really miss the days when we could make fun of Fables and you would get mad.
No, I just I like literally I had enough Fables. It was just like I'm good.
There's a Fables video game that just came out.
Great, good for them.
Okay.
I might talk about it next week.
So, yeah. Those are the books of the week. A lot of good books this week, I thought.
Big things happened. Yes. If you were a Fables guy, big things happened. Like big deals. So that's
somebody
good,
die.
I guess. Yeah. Somebody died, you got to give them credit. They were definitely willing to shake things up, but it was in the other book that I'm not reading.
Those are the books of the week we wanted to talk about. Now let's talk about probably the biggest thing that happened in the comic book world this week, which was the Cap... I'm sorry, I need to say
which wasn't in the comic book.
Well, it's the comic world. It's, yes. Let me say the proper title. Marvel's Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Strong.
They released the... Yeah, that's what they're doing now. They're slapping Marvels on everything. So the first trailer came out, which was pretty exciting, and I think I watched it 5 or 6 times.
Did you watch the trailer of the teaser?
No.
I just waited for that. No, I just watched the trailer.
Because there's no context.
I didn't even know that was
I accidentally watched the Vine for the X-Men Days of Future Past one that's coming out in a few weeks. And there's no context, and there's just a bunch of images flashing by you like it's some sort of a subliminal messaging test.
There's a lot of fast cuts in this trailer anyway, so...
That's enough for a lot of fanboys.
Sure, but, you know, I was a big fan of the first Cap movie, loved it. But this looks and feels like a 70s thriller.
80% of the Captain America movie was my favorite comic book movie.
Mm-hmm. My favorite Marvel movie. It's towards the bottom of my...
I get that, but
But that's also just I'm not a Cap guy.
Right? Yeah, sure. So no, that's totally... Here's the thing that I did.
I'm more a Thor guy. So.
I watched it, and when I was watching, I literally I got tingles on my arms and my scalp. Yep. Like, I was like, oh. Because I realized that... I tweeted somebody to this effect, but I don't get excited about this stuff anymore.
Right.
Because it's all very routine. We see new comic book trailers every month now. And there's a thing that people do that they've been doing lately where they'll go, boy, I can't believe we're watching a show on TV about S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's at this point, why not? There have been literally dozens of these movies now. I'm getting to it.
All right.
And the point is, I'm watching this and I saw the logo come up and I literally said, I can't believe there's 2 Captain America movies. And this one is based on my favorite comic book story,
superhero comic book story.
I know, but you're right, 3, but even so, and I said it even though I get so annoyed when people say it. Because of course there are all these movies, they're really successful and it's been over 10 years.
Right.
But that being said, I was like I can't, and look at there's fucking Falcon.
Yep.
Wow.
It was kind of cool to see there was people who haven't been following this shit like we had to for, for a year, and cuz we've known about Falcon since I think we said it was San Diego 2012. That they started talking about Captain America Winter Soldier, and shortly thereafter they probably mentioned the Falcon was in it. So I've known, and I've seen designs and sketches of Falcon, and know who the actor was and everything. And then
people
that are very excited and are like, wow, Falcon's in a movie. And it's pretty cool to see people get excited about that now.
I was like, who's that black guy? And then right before his wings popped, I go, oh man, is that Falcon? Then his wings popped, I was like, oh, it is. And then I was like, you know what? I've seen that, but I forgot about it. I think I try not to pay attention to it because I want to retain some of that feeling that I don't get very much anymore that I totally got watching this. And it was the same thing watching, I'm going to call him Bucky because what the hell, I've seen the stills, I guess, and I knew he was in it and it was called Winter Soldier, but to watch him walk down the street and there was that out of focus shot of the face, I was like, that is awesome. And I don't want to see another thing. I don't want to see one more moment from this. Because I'm sold already and let's do it. And, I'm not going to reread the books before I go. That's a bad idea. But it's just, that was a great comic book story. I can't wait to watch this.
I think the tone and having Robert Redford in there, it really does.
It lends itself to you start thinking of 3 Days of Condor and all those great movies. And much like Josh forgetting that Falcon was in it, it was fun to watch people who I know but aren't really into comics or as much as we are, didn't even know Robert Redford was in it and them freak out. What is Robert Redford doing in this? What?
Who's he supposed to be in?
This thing's going to be a bad guy?
He's listed as Alexander Pierce.
So he's Lucan.
A S.H.I.E.L.D. Higher up.
Interesting.
But which you think, no one would be above Nick Fury as the director.
I like how Movie Shield is way more bureaucratic. Well, Movie Shield comic is
nothing
shield.
Like TV Shield either.
Movie Shield's got whoever those TV screen face dudes are.
Right. So, you know, I think it's awesome. I think Chris Evans.
I think
is
it
great
looks
Cap.
Great.
I love Chris Evans' Cap. I think he's a yeah. He brings a great quality.
Looking good in the new costume.
Costume's
not so primary blue.
Yeah. I really like the beat of the beginning of it. The thing with him jumping out.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Did he have a parachute? No.
Because he's fucking.
It was nice.
And I think Black Widow was a really cool surprise in Avengers. I thought that
Well, it's very much a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Cap leading his S.H.I.E.L.D. team. So it's almost much more of an event. I mean, I don't want to say Avengers movie, but it's like you get two Avengers in this one.
It's a team up, like yeah. It's a and that's kind of a cool way for it to not feel like a letdown after the Avengers, which there's parts of Iron Man 3 that are like, well, you know, why can't there be more of my favorite
that
characters?
That movie is a team up ball between Tony Stark and an awesome kid.
I love that. That's my favorite part of the movie. Is when he's, and that's a lot of people's least favorite part of the movie, but I really love the stuff where that's the Shane Black thing.
Yeah. That's anyway, the, that's I think the Shane Blackiest part it, of the and movie. We are all disappointed that it's not coming out now.
I always show my dad the trailer, and he always gets, I got to stop it before it says when it comes out because he always gets pissed. He has to wait that long.
Well, I showed Mike Romo the trailer, and he was like, okay, when's it coming out? And I was like, next year. Fuck.
April, right?
Yeah, so we got to wait.
He's not like us, where he's used to seeing things 9 years in advance, so I just think it's never coming out.
Right. But it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Thor in the next, 2 weeks, yeah. And I'm looking forward to Cap, and, these are really fun movies. So
I'm all that excited about Thor.
You're a communist.
I'm excited about Thor.
I think I'm the opposite of a communist, my friend.
You're a communist. Captain America
no,
will punch you in the face.
You're a heathen.
Well,
with your pantheon of gods and whatnot.
Thor is awesome.
You're the one who would be labeled a communist.
Paul and I love Thor.
Yeah.
He's dreamy.
It's like I may be a little bit of a Thor the first movie apologist because I love the character and I love
There's
the cast.
There's nothing to apologize about that movie.
It's not a perfect movie, but
nothing to apologize. It's perfectly charming. Let's get to the audience questions. We're running out of time talking about how adorable Thor is.
Why was Kat Dennings in that movie?
Because she's funny.
I guess.
Scooch. This guy's name is Scooch. That is awesome.
Scooch.
Scooch writes to us from the 1950s from Cylinder, Iowa. Scooch says, the return of Aquaman's beard got me thinking, who has the best head of hair in comics? Who's got the worst? My answer for both is Wolverine.
I miss old Wolverine hair. I miss when they started to try to make it realistic.
Right. You mean like crazy, pointy Wolverine hair?
Yeah, like John Byrne 70s Wolverine hair. Let's roll with that. Or like Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, yeah.
Yeah, like that. I wish they'd do that again. And there was like a bunch of other characters who also had that haircut.
Like when they toned it down. Was it like new X-Men?
Yeah, I mean it was cool when that happened. I think of not Quitely, but I think of John Cassaday. I think it was around the time of the first movie.
Yeah,
it was in 2000 when they were, they were doing all sorts of stuff wrong.
Right, and the new X-Men was first, and it was around the time of the first movie.
They gave him the name James Howlett, for example. Ugh. That was. It went along with the haircut. And it was kind of cool to first see it with like, oh, that's how the hair would really look. And that was fine. But now I'm totally wistful for hair of the past. We were just talking about how do you not go with Thor? Hmm. Thor has magnificent hair. And Thor with a beard is as good as Thor gets.
Right.
I remember the very first time I saw, I guess it was Simonson, had done like a drawing of Thor with a beard, and I was like, he needs to look like that all the time. And I was like 11.
are there superheroes that shouldn't have beards, or do they all look better with the beard?
Captain America shouldn't have a beard, and so that when he has one, it's a giant indicator that shit has gone real wrong.
Right. Right.
It's like Batman.
Batman, same thing. Yeah.
Nightwing, yeah, no beard.
Those are great indicators.
Superman.
I think that's why.
No, Superman should never have a beard on a regular basis, just like Cap.
I liked Iceman's wizard beard from the future.
Gandalf Iceman.
Oh, and Colossus's mustache?
But this is facial hair. We're talking about head hair.
Okay, head hair. All right.
Head hair. I mean,
Cyclops's 90s, you know, model hair was always
a lot of people say Scott Summers.
The problem is that for most of comic book history, all men had the same hair.
Right.
So, I mean, if you wanted to, like, who has the best hair, you do have to give an honorable nod to Guy Gardner, because if nothing else about him, that hair was a signifier of, this guy's a dick because his head is shaped like one. And then, you know, you may not like him and you may not like that hair, but you've got to give points for that visual signifier.
Right.
They shaped his head like a penis.
Is it Namor?
Namor has great hair. I had a friend in school who had hair like Guy Gardner. That was a hairstyle.
And he was probably a dick. Or he was a cute little kid. He was one or the other.
But that was a hairstyle. The moms would just they'd shave around the side, and that was it.
Norman Osborn.
Yeah, well, there's another one. Norman and Harry both had that white guy cornrow thing. I don't know what that is.
I think so. I'm throwing out some, you know, weird ones, but my official answer, I think, is Banshee.
Interesting.
Oh yeah. No, he's got good.
Because that's Cyclops, like that '90s haircut to like the nth degree.
See, I tend to think, when you say Banshee, I tend to think of like him looking like an Irish dock worker back in like the Dark Phoenix saga.
That's what I mean.
In his sweater with like the,
yes,
the huge Donegal sweater.
Yeah.
This is actually something we've lost, is that for a long time, there was all this great, ridiculous comic book hair that was really iconic. And then
it's got to be real, Josh.
Yeah, it's real, but it's also
it's got to be real. I gotta feel the truth in it.
It was silly hair. I mean, you can't pass up Reed Richards and his gray temples. I mean, that's perfect. Like it, so many times in that early stuff, like the haircut would be the real visual cue.
Lady haircuts.
Lady hair.
That's tougher.
So like Storm with the mohawk.
That's a
really cool look. And
yeah, and Dazzler had a lot of hair cuts, like the short one or. Trying to think, it's harder because they just tried to make like these were just a bunch of dudes who didn't know anything about girls, just drawing girls.
I'm a fan of the pixie cut.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you know what, Joshua, I was thinking is you mentioned guys drawing girls who don't know what they're doing. Is Alan Davis still draws the old hair on everyone? So everyone's still especially stuck in the '70s and '80s of Alan Davis, which is great.
Which is at first like it was a thing to be like, this is really taking me out of it, and now it's the opposite. Now I'm like, you go,
yeah,
you roll with that. I like that's your signature. Is you and Brent Anderson have no idea where we live,
right. What time it is?
early,
look around, man.
Bagley, Ultimate Peter Parker for 90 issues,
right?
That whatever that was, it was an extension of the dick hair. So yeah, it's. But like, here's the thing, like he was more memorable with the bad haircut and it was a fun thing to talk about than he is with his haircut looking cool.
Right. Well, there you go, Scooch.
That was a lot more fun.
Scooch probably has those glasses with the little slats in them. Like, in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I picture Scooch with really, really dark jeans that are rolled up a little short, but like a nice thick cuff on them, and then black chuckies.
Yep.
And a shirt tucked in. And
Scooch always
cigarette.
Has a quip for you. No matter what situation, Scooch has that quip ready to go.
Scooch drives a 30s Roadster.
Yep.
Oh, Quicksilver. So it's like Wolverine hair, but silver.
Yeah, well, no, that was the thing. There was the Owl. There was Star Fox. Quicksilver. Yeah. They all had that hair. There was
the same stylist who just says, this is all I can do.
The thing is, there's no real life, antecedent for that hair.
Right.
I don't know what they had in mind when they did that. Well, at all.
It looked like the mask. So when he had the mask off, you could tell who you were looking at.
Yeah.
I think, right? I mean, seems like that's why it would be.
I don't know.
Oh, Tony Stark's Jerry Curl hair?
Sweet. Ooh. Oh, that was the soul glow look. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. And the mustache, and the sort of 80s clothes really completed the adult entertainment star look.
And you know what? And you know what he got for it? He got shot in the spine.
Well,
that's right.
I mean, that's where the goatee sort of saves the character, because he was sort of a joke the way he looked. You know, he didn't pull that mustache off like Tom Selleck. He didn't make it work for him. He looked creepy.
I think they've done some neat stuff with Rogue's hair because she's got the white over the brown. They can do different things with it.
Well, we've talked so much about hair, we've eaten up the entire segment, guys. Good job.
Okay.
Thanks, Scooch.
That's fair.
Thank you very much, Scooch.
That was a good email.
Cylinder.
Get back in that roadster, Scooch. Drive off into
sure
the
thing.
Contact at iFanboy.com is where you email us, and 888-FANBOYS-326-6697 is where you call us. If you have an email like Scooch and you want to get on the show, that was a great email. Good job, Scooch. I just want to keep
Thank
saying
you.
Scooch.
Thank you, Scooch.
Let me throw a really quick plug in.
Does the letter on Scooch's jacket stand for anything, or is it like an ironic letter? Is it just like an S?
He wears the Scooch jacket, and he calls it Scoochmobile. never does
something. He's like, you got scooched.
Never can get the ladies. The ladies always think he's funny, but none of them want to date him.
Scooch-tastic.
Scooch on over. Still funny.
Still scoochable.
I scooch that.
Oh boy, I made an appearance on Eat Geek Play's Crisis and Infinite podcast this week. You can hear me talk about some of the things we talked about in this show. We talked about the Cap trailer and the new books of the week. I talked a lot about Velvet and things like that. So head on over to Eat Geek Play's website and you can find the Crisis and Infinite podcast, episode 3, I believe I'm on. So check that out. That was a lot of fun. And while you're already on the internet doing things, head over to ifanboy.com, comment on this show, tell us some what you thought of the books this week and other things we talked about. You know, if you're Scooch, come say hi.
Here's the thing about Scooch. He doesn't have a Tumblr.
Scooch does not have a Tumblr.
Scooch doesn't have a tweet. He doesn't tweet.
No.
Scooch is out there. He's scooching. He's not. There's no Facebook.com/Scooch.
Okay. I just looked up Cylinder, Iowa.
Not a real place.
88 people live there.
Oh, so everybody knows Scooch.
Everybody knows Scooch. Scooch is everybody's best friend. Scooch. We love that guy, Scooch. It's not a except party until Scooch shows up.
Except like the mayor. The mayor
well, no,
of Cylinder.
The mayor.
Like, Scooch!
The mayor and the chief of police are always, scooched. You got scooched.
Old man Withers got nothing on Scooch.
All you see is white wall tires spinning.
I just like that he lives in Footloose as well. That's what I like.
He's in charge of the chain room.
Okay.
A huge empty space.
Twitter.com/iFanboy. Facebook.com/iFanboy. That's where you can find us scooching.
Good thing they didn't make a Footloose remake. That would be a horrible idea.
Oh, crap.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, particularly if you do not leave 29-second silent messages like spam. That would be the best.
Yeah, especially.
Get a lot of those.
If you dig this kind of thing, write us a review on iTunes or better yet, tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to the podcast, spread the iFanboy scooch. Spread it
I feel like this isn't the last time Scooch is going to make an appearance.
Here's the thing, Scooch. You write us an email, there's a good chance you're going to get on the show.
It's a pretty high bar you've set for yourself, though.
So,
I'm not going to lie.
True, but he's already got a leg up on the rest. Because Scooch has always got a plan. Scooch has always got a scheme going. That's Scooch. The thing is, you can't really hate Scooch. He's lovable, so
it's hard.
Like, it's not even. I'm sure it's not even a nickname. Like, he's like a Dobie Gillis character. It's his name is like Scoochbert Wellington the Third or something like that.
Right,
Scoochbert.
Okay.
No, look, it's right here. It's right here on my birth certificate. You carry your birth certificate around, Scooch? Laugh track.
You've been scooched.
I'm just to say it through one of those half like barn door kind of things.
I want to travel back in time and write a sitcom right now. Or at least like a Happy Days like guest character.
Right.
A month of shows.
Scooch McGillicuddy. All right. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm regrettably just Josh.
This feels so boring now.
I know. When I take her to the track, she really shines. Giddy up, 409. She always turns in the fastest time. Four-speed dual quad positive traction 409. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409. Giddy up, giddy up, 409.